Thank you, Jim. Pleased to be here. So I guess as this is getting going, I work for the USDA Agriculture Research Service, and our research unit is called the Cropping Systems and Water Quality Research Unit. And we sit, as the name implies, right in between this concept of productivity of the landscape and understanding the sustainability of production on that landscape in terms of water quality and soil quality as well. So if you're like me, maybe you've read a lot of proposals recently or been part of proposals that suggest that we should target, for instance, conservation practices or new biofuel cropping systems on these marginal areas. So it's natural that we should try to define them physically on the landscape, and that's what this project is about. But there's a lot of ways you can define marginality. The classic definition that we might think of first is that a landscape is economically marginal if it's not profitable to produce on. On the other hand, if you're thinking about the environmental side of things, then there are soil landscapes that are critical source areas that are environmentally marginal to be produced on. And what would be the ideal situation is if these two kinds of areas intersect. And in making that intersection, we could then perhaps define what areas are marginally sustainable and target them for some other kind of alternative cropping system. So one way to do that, I'm going to focus on, you're catching us in mid-stride of this project, but I'm going to focus on the economic part of the question and how we get at that. And the simplest way to do that, it perhaps, is through yield map data. Yield maps are produced by producers from their combines and GPS and yield sensing equipment on the combines. And the great thing about yield maps is you can get a lot of data very quickly. It's very spatially dense, intense. And now since yield monitors have been out there for about 15 years, we're starting to get longer time intervals of repeat visits to the landscape. There's a lot of bad things about this kind of data, however. First of all, the yield monitor has to be calibrated properly, and this is not something that we know a lot about. Producers are doing this and not always maybe following best management practices in that regard. And there's a lot of data handling problems, field naming errors, crop misallocation, corn versus soybean. Equipment glitches, GPS can go out. You might miss a whole field one year because the card was full on your yield monitor. And there's some other other issues with this kind of data related to the way the crop enters the combine and goes through the system and up to the sensor. There's quite a delay from where you cut the crop and where it's sensed in the hopper. And there's a lot of configuration problems with this data too. Point rows and turn rows introduce some management error to these yield maps. And then there's some ugly things about this data. So we got the good, the bad, and the ugly. And those center around the fact that this is found data. There's no design to this data. It's probably biased to specific kinds of producers. And there are some things I'll address about that. And because these are crop rotations, the corn-soybean rotations, we do still have a sparse revisitation problem where you, in a nine-year period, you may only have, you know, four corn and five soybean maps. And crop failures never end up here. You know, if the crop is never planted or if it's drowned out or something happens, we're not going to know about that. It's not going to be in our yield map database. And the biggest ugly headache with this data is the fact that it's very severely autocorrelated. You'll see how that causes us problems. So the key questions that we have are, can we use this kind of yield map data to identify and develop spatial estimates of yield and yield risk for use in identifying economically marginal areas? And once we know those things, we can ask the question, well, do these economically marginal areas overlap with the environmentally marginal areas? And then can we target those parts of the landscape? And I'm going to really just deal with this first question, and you'll see so far that I'm not sure we can from this data, but we have a long way to go to figure it out. So our data and modeling approach is kind of the standard fare for most of you, and that is environmental correlation, where we collect the yield data, we collect environmental correlates, we combine them, and we use some sort of a modeling procedure to understand the correlation in between those data. And then the goal is to apply that model everywhere. We want these yield maps and potentially yield risk maps to be present for our whole study region. And our study region is all of Northeast Missouri. This is the central clay pan area of Northeast Missouri. And what you're seeing here are the corn and soybean field locations of our data. There's a lot of overlapping here. We have, right now, over 2,100 field years of data. So this is 2,100 yield maps that we have to build this data. About half for corn and about a little bit more than half for soybean. For an aerial perspective, it's 115,000 acre years. And this is sort of the temporal distribution of this data. You can almost see the adoption curve going from the early, or I guess mid-90s, up to roughly current times. 2009 is our most recent data in our data warehouse. And so each one of these 2,000 yield maps has to be physically cleaned. And when I say physically, I mean in the last couple of years we've been working on this project, it really is a very manual process. And we use the software called Yield Editor, now at version 2.0, to facilitate this. There are a lot of filters and tools that make this a more streamlined process. And now we have an ace, and that is the automated yield cleaning expert that can manage a lot of these things in an automated fashion, in batch mode. And this is kind of a sort of an outgrowth of the demands of this project. Kind of a cool feature of this, and I won't be able to go into the details here, is an automatic delay calculation algorithm developed by Dong Hoon Lee. You see a paper coming out about that, and this is a Fourier transform method looking at the phase correlation between lagged images in an automated way to identify what that machine delay time is. From each producer has a different delay time, and they're not very good about setting it. So one of the most time-consuming things is that you have to find this delay. And now we can do it in an automated way. That software is freely available. So the traditional approach that you see in the digital soil mapping community is we have some terrain attributes, elevation, slope, curvature, and complex attributes. This is a wetness index. And we use some localized terrain attribute information. We have this in multiple scales. This is a large data set in all of Northeast Missouri and much of Iowa, actually, to produce this data set at both 10 and 30 meter rasters. It's big data. And we use Sergo map unit attributes as well. And in addition, one of the sort of Missouri specific productivity index that's been developed in recent times to try to predict yield or yield risk. So we aggregate this 13 million records, just sort of for perspective, and we need to aggregate this so we can better handle it. And we do so by just making it to 10 or 30 meter raster resolution, just averaging it. We split it into 70 or 30 model training and testing split on field years. So a field that's in the training data set does not appear in the test data set within the same year. Now, this is where I think we're kind of going off the tracks here, in that because this data is so badly autocorrelated, and the approach we're going to take here is pretty badly affected by that. And one of the things that I've been trying to do to mitigate that is to sample this data space very sparsely. So we might go from almost a million data points in the aggregated data set to 1% of that in the modeling data set. But unfortunately, I think you'll see that it hasn't been really that effective. And we're using data mining models as the environmental correlation modeling tool. So this image gives you kind of a good picture of what the data set looks like that you're seeing here. Violin plots that show on the y-axis the distribution of the yield data for each individual year. You can see where the medians fall. And immediately you should recognize that there's a huge amount of variation in any given year and between years. This is problematic, and to us that implies that we need to model each one of these years separately. And I think I'll prove that case as we go on. So this is an example of how badly overfitting and autocorrelation can affect us with these with these procedures. What you're seeing on the left side is a predicted and observed from a cubist tree of regressions model that's very flexible and very happy to fit small details in an autocorrelated data set. But then when you take it to that independent data set, it's probably different climate years and different locations. It's not quite able to do it. And it gets worse from there. This is 2009. It would be nice if they were that good, but they get much worse. So we have a lot of work to do here to handle this problem. I'm looking for ideas on that, by the way. So back to this year-to-year problem, the year-to-year variation or within-year variation. This is it's not just this autocorrelation problem that we face. It's this noisy landscape relationship between, and I'm going to show corn yield data here, and this is a local elevation model. It's compressed the standard elevation by subtracting the baseline. There's two things you should notice this. Okay, the local elevation is on the x-axis on the bottom, and the corn yield is on the y-axis on the top. And what you're seeing in the panels are individual years. What should stand right out to you, first of all, is that there's a tremendous amount of scatter in these data for any given year, for any given value of local elevation. And secondly, that relationship with local elevation appears to change on a year-to-year basis from going up in some years to going down in some years. So again, this kind of means to me that we need to model these years individually and then combine the data. And this is one of the reasons why. This is what we call the yield landscape inversion. And what you're seeing on the left side is a dry year corn yield map. And there's a drainage here that collects water, and this is an eroded side slope. So in a dry year, the eroded side slope yields poorly. However, in a wet year, this relationship is entirely reversed. Whereas in the wet year, the depositional areas get flooded out and have nitrogen loss and these kinds of problems. Now, these are things we've recognized since 1997 and 1999. This is not something fancy and new, but we're facing it here on a massive scale with this data set. So again, I'm not, and another, we also want to use map unit attributes to as predictors, but what you should see in this is that there's a tremendous amount of variation within map units. So for instance, this eroded backslope has almost a yield of 0 bushels per acre. That's really 0 bushels per acre. And then can go as high as 140 bushels per acre in this one Sergo map unit. This happens to be one of the most productive map units in the entire region, and we have zero yield in it. So it's a huge range. So what's my time? What do I have left? Okay. So the direction we're going with this is to hopefully actually get some models that work. And use those models. You know, so we, even though we have these problems with modeling, we have some greater problems in the landscape. And that deals with managing corn on eroded backslopes. And these landscapes in particular are sensitive to this management system. We have all kinds of effects on soil quality and water quality, and in the end, it really affects yield. It's nice that in this landscape, these critical management areas really do align with our yield problem areas. So we need to solve this problem. And if we can get a good yield map, then perhaps we can develop a decision support system whereby a producer can look at their landscape and put some budget data about different kinds of cropping systems, a biomass cropping system, for instance, and then actually have some real expected results about where perhaps over the long term they could be profitable in managing their landscape. And with that, I'll conclude. So we're fighting this autocorrelation problem and just data noise problems. So if you've got any ideas, I'd be pleased to hear them.